Did you know that the original Final Fantasy creator, Hironobu Sakaguchi, made a spiritual successor to that legendary series called Fantasian for Apple Arcade, and every level in the game is a handmade, physical miniature model? Enjoy unlimited access to over 200 incredibly fun games with no ads and no in-app purchases. From puzzle and adventure games to sports, racing, and multiplayer action games, everyone can count on finding something to love. Head to sifter.com.au/arcade to start your free trial of Apple Arcade today. That's sifter.com.au/arcade for a 1 month free trial of Apple Arcade, and you'll be supporting independent video games journalism. This offer is for new subscribers only. $9.99 a month after free trial. Plan automatically renews after trial until cancelled. Hello and welcome to a special episode of Mainstream. My name is Gianni. Thanks for joining me. Whether you're listening on the Mainstream feed or in the Pixel Sif feed, this is a great story. It's about how a small 7 or so person team have now delivered games with 2 big licenses, tactical strategy games, drawing on their expertise. The first game that you might have heard of them, it's not the first game they've ever made, but is Battlestar Galactica Deadlock. And they've just completed Warhammer 40,000 Battle Sector. I'm, of course, talking about Perth's Black Lab Games. Our guests on this episode are Black Lab Games founder and producer Paul Turbutt and writer and designer Anthony Sweet. If you've listened to the podcast before, you know we've spoken to them a number of times, had them on the show, but we had the chance to visit them at their studio and ask them some questions face-to-face about how this franchise dropped into their laps, about how the role of the publisher Slytherin Games that they work with was integral and part of that, and what it took to actually put this game together. I started by asking Paul how they actually got the chance to work on a Warhammer 40,000 game.
So this kind of comes off the back of our relationship with our publisher Slytherin. They had the license available to make a Warhammer game. They've made a few other games, Warhammer games in the past. Warhammer 40,000, Armageddon, Sanctus Reach, Gladius, a few other games have done. They have a good relationship with Games Workshop. So they had the license available, and we had been working on Battlestar Galactica Deadlock with them for a few years. And as that project was starting to taper down, they asked us if we'd be interested in doing a Warhammer game. And after thinking about it for about 0.1 of a millisecond, we said, yes, we would absolutely love to do that. And yeah, and here we are.
So a lot of people who are big Warhammer fans would have heard of the game, but let's take it right back to the beginning for people who may not come across it. What sort of Warhammer game are we talking about? What is Black Lab put out for everyone to play?
Yeah, so we do turn-based strategy games, but we try to put a bit of a sort of exciting action presentation spin on it. So it's basically a turn-based game where it's set in the Warhammer 40,000 universe. For anyone who's familiar with the lore, it's set after the events of the devastation of Baal, which is quite a big deal in the lore terms. So that's kind of where our game is set.
And the tabletop Warhammer 40K game is a strategy game. How close is your game to the actual tabletop version in terms of how it plays?
Pretty close. Yeah. So we take a lot of inspiration from the tabletop. It's not a direct one for one, but we like the scale of our battles, the army sizes that we're dealing, a lot of the way that the combat resolves out, even our scoring systems and multiplayer, like we take a lot of big cues from the tabletop. We want this to feel very comfortable for tabletop players. So, yeah.
And what was it like sort of creating or mirroring that experience from the tabletop game? Because I know some of my favorite strategy games in the 40K universe were real-time strategies, a lot more like your Warcrafts and things like that, the Dawn of War series, of course.
Yep.
And you are obviously doing a turn-based sort of strategy, which is much more close to the thing. Could you make it as close to the tabletop? Could it be a one-to-one? Did you want to make it a one-to-one?
So a couple of things. You probably wouldn't want to anyway, because video games have their own aspects. There's things that make video games, and if you were to take a tabletop thing and recreate that exactly, it's been done, but I think you'd be missing out on some stuff. We're able to put a lot more sort of narrative, like the campaign is very narrative focused, and we're able to do that to a much better fidelity, I think, by leaning into what makes video games, as opposed to trying to copy the tabletop. So they're very different experiences, and I think that's probably actually the best of both worlds to take those cues from the license of the IP, what makes it special, take those cues, but then lean into what makes video games good.
Yeah. I think like one of the things that we really strive for here at Black Lab is authenticity is like a pillar of everything. Like we try to make this work really well for us for Battlestar. You know, like folks would come into Battlestar Galactica Deadlock and they would be, you know, drop the whole game name there just in case. But you know, people would come into that and be like, this feels like I'm playing an episode of a TV show. And, you know, it would be remiss of us if we kind of stepped away from that. Like authenticity is a really important thing for us as a studio. We want people to feel who are fans of that property to feel like, you know, this is the experience I wanted out of Warhammer. This is the world I want to be in, you know. We want people to be fans of the property to be fans of our work as well. And so, yeah, authenticity is a really big thing for us.
Tell me a little bit about the process of, you know, building on what you have built in the past and turning it into this game. What were some of the core Black Lab ingredients that you could bring across, and what did you need to do brand new?
That's a good question.
That's a very good question.
Authenticity is the big one, which we've already just talked about.
Yeah, that's definitely underlies everything, definitely. Yeah. I guess, like, so we did Battlestar, and then before that we did Starhammer, right? They're both spaceship combat games. So this is a, you know, miniatures on, or, you know, little characters on the field. So there was some different, you know, technology things we had to deal with that we haven't had to deal with in past projects, you know, character animation, all that kind of stuff. Designing, like, environments, like in space, there's not a whole lot of environment. It's just, you know, rocks and planets in the background and stuff. So there were some new things we had to do with that, which I think was a very interesting and exciting challenge. Yeah, I'd say they're probably the main things.
How about in terms of writing the story, Anthony? How does that kind of fit into, you know, what you could do with a Battlestar license versus a 40K license versus, you know, Starhammer?
It was really interesting, right? With Battlestar, like, I wanted to take the very similar approach what we did with Battlestar. So, like, with Battlestar, there's all... you have the timeline of everything in Battlestar Galactica Deadlock, everything from the colonies of Kobol all the way through to the end of the TV show. And we find specifically where's a place where we know stories occur because they've been talked about, but we haven't yet seen them, right? Bang, that's where we want to be. And we took the same approach with this one. And basically it came down to like when Paul was reading Devastation of Baal, because he read the book first before everyone else, and then he sent me an excited message. He's like, I found exactly where our story is going to take place. It's in the second last page of the book. And basically there's a phrase right near the end of the book, which is like, because Devastation of Baal, just to give a quick recap, Blood Angel is one of the main space marine forces. Their home world, Baal, is getting invaded by massive fleet of Tyranids, aliens for folks who aren't familiar with them, called High Fleet Leviathan. And this is one of the major battles in the current part of the storyline with it. If the Tyranids win, Baal gets devoured, completely overrun, and the Blood Angels are no more. So it's a really big plot point for both of these factions plus other ones. And Devastation of Baal is a book written by Guy Haley, particularly about that battle. It goes into great detail about how Dante and all the rest of the Blood Angels and all the extra successor chapters go through it all. And then right near the end of the book, there's a section where like they've beaten the Tyranids off from Baal. They know everything's not completely done. And so like, and they spend a couple of weeks cleaning up Baal Secundus and Baal. And we're like, okay, that's where our story takes place. So we've done the same thing. We find that one part where we know stories exist, but they haven't been told yet. So that was the foundational part of writing for it. But then stylistically, tonally, character development, plot-wise, completely different from Battlestar. Battlestar, you're dealing with like a lot of drama and a lot of politics and a lot of human emotions coming out to make bad decisions. Whereas Warhammer's a lot more bombastic and epic and, you know, morality tales. And, you know, there's a very distinct flavor and a very distinct tone to Warhammer to match, right? So it involved a lot of research. And like, if you're familiar with Warhammer 40K, like as soon as you log on to any of the wikis for 40K, like you go to one page and you scroll, and you still scroll 2 minutes later and the page, they still haven't stopped talking about this one topic, right? And then that's just one character from one faction in the entire universe kind of thing. So a lot of research. And then just trying to mimic that voice, right? Try to find all the key things that makes a Warhammer character sound like a Warhammer character. But yeah, basically it just boiled down to a lot of research and mimicking that tone, yeah.
Is it a challenge or is it a good constraint to be working in a franchise that has so much lore, like you've just described there?
There's a lot of foundational work there that's already been done by folks for you to build off as well.
And good foundation work.
Really good foundation work, yeah. Like Warhammer 40K has been going for decades now, right? All kinds of stories have been told in the Warhammer 40,000 universe. It is, like, I would be lying if I said it's not scary, because it is, it's nerve-wracking, you know? Because a lot of people have a lot of expectations about what a Warhammer story says and, like, what a Warhammer story sounds like. And then on top of that, when you look at our particular situation where, like, we're Blood Angels, who are very noble, very introspective, versus Tyranids, who you can't even really treat them as an antagonist because they don't have a point of view, other than they just want to devour everything. There's challenges there. How do you tell that story? You don't have the pure protagonist versus antagonist kind of back and forth you would typically have. There have been challenges there, but also I'm pretty confident we've done pretty well with the narrative in this game. Our voice acting, like bless our voice actors, they sound so good for what, they really just got the essence of the Warhammer, of the grimness, of the determination, of the, the characters who feel very, reverential, they do. The characters who have got the zealous fury to them, they do. Like, our actors really gave everything for them as well, and that goes a long way to helping the storytelling and to helping the story come through.
Where does it, in terms of sit, how, you've got a story that now exists in sort of the pantheon of 40K. Were you given license to carve out your own little niche? Did you have to think of the considerations of what other greater movements are happening in the particular 40K lore? How does that sort of work?
Yeah, so... The good thing about working on this property is that the stories tend, like, there's a lot of stories going on all at once, but they also, the plot moves fairly slowly. It's taken quite a while for this part of the Warhammer 40,000 lore to actually get to this point. And the particular story we're telling is actually back a bit, I can't even remember when Devastation of Baal was written. It would have been...
Three, four years ago,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah. So that's been set in stone for a while, and things have moved on back there. So the chances of anyone retrospectively looking back and be like, we want to take this place where Anthony's writing, it's pretty slim. There are considerations we have to take. There's like specific characters that if we want to reference them, we have to know, we have to be able to point out exactly where they are. That's why they're here. That's why we can talk about them. Or they're not here. That's why we can't use them. Because if we're not consistent with that continuity, someone else who's been reading the books is going to be like, well, hang on a second, they can't be talking to Astaroth. Astaroth was all the way over on the other side of the galaxy at this point in time, right? Because they're very good at their continuity on this kind of thing. And we need to, same as with Battlestar again, I keep on bringing up, but there's just so many similarities between running for the two projects. Continuity and authenticity are really important.
Sit down for a chat with your pals in video games. This is Mainstream by Pixel Sift.
Talking of that link between the two, what are some of those lessons that you learnt from making Deadlock? Because that was quite a long development process, and there were expansions that kind of came out as well. What are some of the lessons that you brought forward into making this game and how it plays?
Yeah, so one thing I'd say with when Battlestar came out, we put it out there and we hoped that someone would buy it, right? And then 3 years later, we finally finished working on it. So we didn't actually expect to be spending, 3 years of expansion and extra content after the game came out. This time around, we've got a base game and we're sort of fully expecting that we'll be able to support it for a period of time. And so we've definitely sort of planned for that, to be able to continue to expand it into the future. So what we're putting out is kind of just the start. And yeah, hopefully it's going to be going for quite a while. So that's probably the first thing that comes to mind.
You talked about that sort of really over the top, very exaggerated feel of playing the game. And as someone who played 40K in my youth, the feeling of collecting the army and building that up, is that something you wanted to try and capture when people are playing this game, unlocking new units, new teams, that sort of thing?
Yeah, definitely.
You want people to feel familiar with the stuff as well. Like, we want the Blood Angels players out in the world to rock up to the game and be like, oh, yeah, I know how these assault marines work, right? Like, they should have a really easy way in. But at the same time, we also have to be honest that there's going to be folks who don't play the tabletop game, but they're going to want to play this, and we've got to accommodate them as well. So how do we make Blood Angels accessible to them? How do we make them, like, how can we tell the difference between make it easy for someone who hasn't played tabletop, knows the lore maybe, but hasn't played tabletop, that an assault marine can do this versus an intercessor can do that? What's the difference between, deep diving on the Warhammer 40K stuff? How do we differentiate between a Primaris and a Firstborn kind of thing, right? What does that mean? And thankfully for us, like, our story specifically is dealing with Primaris being brandly introduced to the Blood Angels chapter, and like, what does that mean for the chapter? And how do they perform differently to the Firstborn units as well? So, like, you know, it's been a nice marriage there of being able to tell that story of how the Blood Angels specifically get reinforced with the Primaris, and at the same time being like the first video game to use a lot of these Primaris units. Yeah. I think Dawn of War 3 had one Primaris unit. They had like a Primaris chaplain or something. But we're the first game that I'm aware of that, you know, we've got the Intercessors, the Aggressors, the Inceptors, Hellblasters, you know.
It was a mobile game.
Oh, yeah, they probably did.
Yeah, I can't remember what it's called.
But first game on PC.
Yeah.
There we go.
And Xbox and PlayStation.
Yeah. What does the game actually play like? What sort of experience will people be sitting down to enjoy? Is it long campaign chapters? Is it short little missions? How does it play?
Sure. So there's the campaign. So there's a few different parts to it. There's the campaign. You got your skirmish, and then you got your multiplayer. So there's three different things. The campaign, obviously, very narrative focused. The missions start pretty small. The first one's only like 10 or 15 minutes. Towards you get the ones towards the end, and you know, you're looking to an hour to 2 hours to play through. Yeah. I think the campaign clocks out around about sort of 30, 35 hours, depending on you know how much time you spend in it. Skirmish, it's pretty much, you know, you can make whatever armies you want. Against whatever armies you want, and there's sort of ad hoc battles. And then the multiplayer, which is, I think, where once you've done with the campaign, then you go into multiplayer and you can find some people. And I think it becomes hopefully a little bit more social in that, you know, you can find people to play with online and you can, you know, do that. So there's a few different ways you can play multiplayer as well. There's like the live matches, so people both online at the same time. So you can, you know, be in Discord chatting or whatever, and you can doing your moves and you can see the other player doing their moves. But there's also like an asynchronous mode, which I think surprised us during the beta how popular that became. And so the way that works is that someone sets up a match, and then you go and you choose, you know, your army, and then someone else accepts that challenge. And you've got a number of different modes and stuff within this. You go and do your move, and then uploads to a server. And then the other player, when at their convenience, then go and downloads that turn, sees it plays out, and does their turn. So it means that the multiplayer can fit in with your time, however it suits best to play. So if you've got, you know, a spare hour or whatever, and you can go and play a match, and if you've only got like 10 minutes, you can just go and download the turn, have your turn, go and do whatever. And potentially you can have like multiple multiplayer matches going at a time, which we've all done.
People in different time zones as well.
Yeah, and people in different time zones can be playing each other. That's actually turned out to be something that we kind of thought would be interesting and would be cool, but during the beta actually turned out to be a lot even more interesting and cool than we thought. So.
Yeah, it was pretty regular that I would rock up to work and the first thing I'd be doing is I'd go check in on my asynchronous games, right? And then there'd be like 15, 20 minutes worth of multiplayer games just waiting for me. Get through those, send them off, done for the day, Not gonna see it again until tomorrow, but like it's still a great competitive way to play the multiplayer. Yeah.
That's not exactly the newest idea because I remember playing chess by email back in the day.
Yeah,
and I think even Age of Empires used to be able to do it in some capacity as well. So it's like a really interesting that's
back,
same sort
back
of
to the future
has kind of come back into the thing.
Yeah.
What is Facebook poking?
Yeah, Facebook poking is what people used to be able to, exactly. Yeah. What has been some of that feedback from the community that you've had that sort of shaped the development process of this game?
More blood.
More blood.
Yeah.
More
gibbs. I think we did that pretty well.
Yeah, we did.
Yeah. I mean, like with any beta, the beta lasted for about 5 months, I think. Mm-hmm. You always find issues at the start. You know, there were some issues with the control systems, which we fixed up. Obviously balancing is an ongoing thing, and even now the game is released, it'll probably still be an ongoing thing. It's kind of hard to think of too many specifics, to be honest. Like it's all just the general things you find.
I mean, there's always circumstances where folks, especially with the tier, like we had a couple of beta testers who are tyranny players in the tabletop, and they'll very quick to tell you, this unit doesn't feel the way that it's supposed to feel because, you know, I'm not a Tyranid player. I am now, but I wasn't back when I first started designing those units, right? And so, you know, we are always on board for community feedback. It served us well in our previous games, and it has served us well now in Battle Sector. Hopefully we'll continue to do so.
Yeah, yeah. No, there's no question it's super valuable.
We're just a few hours out from when people are going to be able to play this in main. How are you feeling right at this moment?
Nervous.
Yeah. Yeah, equal parts, excited and terrified.
Yeah, like even like for me, I'm not going to talk for Paul, I'm not going to talk for anyone else, but I know for me personally, like I get the most nervous when I see someone saying they're looking forward to it.
Yeah,
because I want to meet their expectations. I want them to be happy. I want them to enjoy what we've made. You know, quite nerve wracking, and I think this weekend's going to be quite nerve-wracking as well, but excited as well. Excited.
Does the pressure feel different to approaching a game like this versus even Battlestar?
Yes.
And yeah. Why?
Definitely, yeah. Okay, when we did Battlestar, pretty much nobody knew who we were. I mean, I'm not saying a lot of people do now, but we were very unknown, right? And there was not a lot of expectations for the project. Battlestar, like, it's an awesome TV show, best TV show, still my favourite of all time. But by the time we did the game, it had been off the air for, 7 or 8 years, whatever. It was the game casual fan base, and there wasn't a lot of expectations for what it was going to be. Warhammer is very active. It's arguably never been more popular. We've got people that really enjoy Battlestar that are looking forward to this game. And so there's a lot more expectation this time than there was last time, which is not something we've actually had to deal with in the past. So it has been quite an interesting thing. Like, I totally agree with what Anthony said. When someone says, I'm really looking forward to it, I'm really happy about that. It's what I've always wanted to do making from a game studio, is to make stuff that people care about and that they want to play. What I didn't anticipate was also the concern of I hope it meets their expectations.
And that's a big one, right? We got like a bunch of people who are like, they're just like, they might not be sure on one or two things about the game, but they're just like, but the Black Lab guys are making it. So that's wild to me. Like, they're willing to give it the try just because they trusted us from Battlestar, or what someone said about Battlestar. It's wild.
Thinking about where Black Lab has been over the years, you did get a little bit of funding from the Australian Interactive Games Fund.
Yep.
How much of a difference has that made in the path of your studio?
I've actually said this many times. That is the catalyst for where we are now. If we hadn't have got that, Black Lab would probably still be a hobby of mine, working, which I did on the weekends while I worked somewhere else. That small amount of funding was what allowed me to take this to a full-time job, to get Anthony and others involved, to get the publishing contract, which led to Battlestar, which led to Warhammer. So there's a linear direct line from that small amount of funding to where we are now. Yeah. It absolutely made a difference.
And have you paid it back in sort of tax?
Many times over. Yeah, absolutely.
There was a little bit of an announcement that came out from the federal government talking about some close to a producer credit for studios. Is that sort of support helpful for a studio like yours?
It won't hurt.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, like, I think the specifics of that hasn't been worked out yet, and there's, you know, ongoing discussions about what that looks like. There's still, you know, a consultation phase and whatever. Yeah, I mean, it's definitely going to help. But so long as the settings are right, yeah, it will make a difference for sure.
And you're a Perth studio. Mm. Are you going to remain a Perth studio forever? Is that something about that's important to you? Because Perth is not super on the map for making big high profile Battlefront games.
It's where we live, yeah. And that's not going to change. I think the other Anthony wants us to move to Broome for the weather. But no, we're not going anywhere.
Yeah. Mm. What do you hope that players will get out of it if they are excited? But what's the experience you want them to have when they sit down to play Battle Sector for the first time or for the 50th time?
I hope the first time they play it, they just go, "Holy crap, this is awesome!" And I hope that 3 years from now, they can still play the game and enjoy it for the additions and stuff and for the improvements it's had over the years.
Yeah, I hope they find the story resonates with people. Like, I feel like there's a lot that's going on in this story in quite an understated way. I hope the campaign is an experience that people thoroughly enjoy and, you know, feel something from. But also, like, I hope people can enjoy multiplayer. Like, our multiplayer, like, in the beta test, it's just super fun. Like, you know, like, we're going to, you know, all things going to plan, you know, hopefully we'll get a competitive scene similar to what we did with Battlestar, you know, get some casual games going. Just, like, multiplayer is fun, and I really hope people dig into it as well, yeah.
Two of you are sitting here on the couch in front of you, but who is the rest of Black Lab, and what does it take to make a game like this?
Okay, so we're actually pretty small by international studio standards. Our core group is seven. There's obviously us. I do production. Anthony does all the game design, writing and stuff. I've got Anthony, art director. We've got Joey, who does most of our 3D art. We've got two programmers, Amos and Matt, who are both very good at what they do. And we've got Chris, who does our QA. So there's a lot of roles and stuff that bigger companies would have that we don't have. And we have, you know, people doing multiple things. And then we've also got a few outsourcers that we work with regularly as well. Yeah. So we've got Ash, who does all our music. We've got Dan, who's done all our sound effects and does our voice recordings and stuff. I've got Ben, who does our portraits. I worked Elroy, who's our UI artist. And Brent did our narrative images. So, yeah, I think they're the main ones I can think of. Yeah, that's pretty much our development team. Plus, we're also very well supported by Slytherin, who's our publisher. Who obviously, you know, help us with getting licenses and, you know, getting things to move in different areas where we need it to. And I also couldn't talk about the team without mentioning Games Workshop and how amazing they've been with their support as well. I actually found them amazingly good to work with, which is not, you know, what I expected, but, you know, they've been really great.
And there's a lot of decisions that are made, a lot of little pieces that go into a project like this. What is something that you keep looking back to and think, oh, I'm really proud of that particular moment or that particular thing that we've implemented?
Oh, for me, it's got to be the fact that I did an odd couple set of characters. Like, there's just two characters in the campaign. One of them is like the crotchety old tech marine, and one is the esoteric librarian dreadnought. And the fact that I just got to write an odd couple dynamic in Warhammer, I'm chuffed about. It's great.
So one of the beta testers on the private Discord, they played it for the first time and they wrote, "There's so much blood, I love it." So I'm just happy we put heaps of blood in. Blood for the blood god.
Skulls for the skull throw.
Exactly. Yep.
This is Mainstream by Pixel Sift.
That was Paul Turbutt and Anthony Sweet speaking from their offices at Black Lab Games in Western Australia. Thanks to the team there for inviting us in to have a chat to them about Warhammer 40,000 Battle Sector, which is available now on PC, published by Slytherin Games, and will be coming to PlayStation and Xbox down the track as well. So keep an eye out for that. You can find a video version of this story on our website. Go to pixelsift.com.au and you should be able to find it right there, or there'll be a link to it in the show notes of this episode.
My name is Gianni. Thanks for joining us on this episode of Mainstream. Coming up later this week, we're actually going to be talking a little bit more about some of the games that we play. We bring you two games, two of the team talk about those games, their experiences with them, and we talk about why we like them, why we found them challenging, why they didn't sit with us, all of that sort of thing on this feed. So if you like this, search for Mainstream in your podcast player. Hit follow. You can get every episode for free. You can find out more of what we do on the Pixel Sift website. That's pixelsift.com.au. You can read articles. You can see our other podcasts with other interviews with game developers and digital creatives as well. And you can find other cool videos that we do, like live streams. You can do that by going to pixelsift.com.au. While you're on the internet, we'd love to have you as part of our Discord community, pixelsift.com.au/Discord. Come in there, share your games, share your creative work if you make things. Talk about all the cool stuff that you like to enjoy as well. We'd love to have you there. So pixelsift.com.au/Discord. That's all for this episode of Mainstream. Until next time, have fun.
Did you know that the original Final Fantasy creator, Hironobu Sakaguchi, made a spiritual successor to that legendary series called Fantasian for Apple Arcade, and every level in the game is a handmade, physical miniature model? Enjoy unlimited access to over 200 incredibly fun games with no ads and no in-app purchases. From puzzle and adventure games to sports, racing, and multiplayer action games, everyone can count on finding something to love. Head to sifter.com.au/arcade to start your free trial of Apple Arcade today. That's sifter.com.au/arcade for a 1 month free trial of Apple Arcade, and you'll be supporting independent video games journalism. This offer is for new subscribers only, $9.99 a month after free trial. Plan automatically renews after trial until cancelled.